I am Vince P., and I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon program. And I have been since 1992. There was a year prior to that I wasn't too grateful. I was there coming just for hit and miss to try to hold on to the alcoholic in my life today. And it was not very fun. So let me tell you, I have two older brothers, older sister, two half-brothers, two stepsisters, and none of them have got a clue about the program. And they were just like me. Mom and Dad, my real father, divorced in 72, and we moved to Florida. I was raised in Ohio, and we moved to Florida, and in 72 they divorced, and Mom was working in a restaurant, and Quarter Flags down there is a head waitress down there, and she met my stepfather, and my stepfather was the type that he did what I do today, and install furniture and drapes all over the country for different hotels. So I'm on the road constantly, and he was back then. And when Mom first met him and would bring him around the house, he'd have a brown paper sack and a bottle of Old Granddad in it, and he stayed drunk all the time. And he'd go out of town and come back in town, they'd date and see each other for a little while, and then they decided that he wanted to get married. And he turned to my mom and asked her, and my mom looked him dead in the face and said, "The only way I'll marry you is if you put that bottle down." That's what I knew about alcoholism. If you love somebody enough, you would just set it down and walk away from it and be happy. And for years, that's all I knew. And so they got married, and we moved into Memphis. That's where his home office was. And I graduated high school and moved to Florida for a year, back to Florida with my real dad, and worked down there for a year as a cook at the Holiday Inn in Naples, Florida. And down there, I just had a blast. I was fresh out of school. I was working. And when I left Florida after high school, I weighed about 125, 130 pounds. And a year later, I come back, I weighed 270 pounds. My parents didn't even recognize me. And I tell you this at this time because later on, when I come back home and I started doing traveling, with my dad, my stepfather called me and asked me if I wanted to do what he was doing. I said, sure. So that's what I did. But prior to that, when I was in high school, I had worked for a fast food place. And that's the first time I met the alcoholic that was going to be in my life. She worked there at the restaurant with me. And we went out one time while we were there, working there. I was 16, she was 16. And it was a disaster date. Just a disaster. And we'd go back to work, we'd talk, but as far as going out again, there wasn't no way. Later on, during the year, a couple years later, I'd gone on the road and was doing that, and I seen her at a bar one night. And I asked her for her phone number. And she gave it to me, and I turned around and walked away. Told her I'd call her. And it was about another month or two later, I went out to another bar and seen her, and I was on my way to San Francisco, and I asked her, I said, I was serious. I said, would you like to go to San Francisco with me? And she said, no, but call me when you get back. So I said, okay. Well, good as I am, trying to get something done, about a week before I come back from San Francisco, I was calling her every night, trying to get a hold of her. To make that plan where we'd go out as soon as I got back home, because I didn't know how long I was going to be home. And she ignored my phone calls for probably first 4 or 5 days. And finally, her mom, her parents both were in the program at the time and stuff, talked her into calling me. She had just come out of a bad relationship herself, a bad marriage. Her first marriage was pretty rough, physically rough. So she called me, and we went out and started dating ever since then. Now, I told her when we first started dating, this is what I do for a living. You know, I travel all over the country, and you're more than welcome to come with me if you would like. Or you can stay home. It doesn't matter to me. And she chose to stay home and stay in town. And I traveled and would come in and out of town, and problems would start happening. Things would start happening around the house. Bills wasn't getting paid. Just odd and end stuff. And I'd come back home after being gone, and I'd wonder what happened. You know, you had plenty of money to pay the bills. You had plenty of money to do this and that. And I never paid attention to the refrigerator, where the big boxes of wine sit inside the refrigerator. Never paid attention to them. But what I did pay attention to at first was all the drugs sitting in the bottles in the bedroom, sitting on the counter, and that she was taking those. And we'd come home, I'd fight. We'd fight till way hours in the morning. And then I'd leave again. That was my escape, being able to get back in my car and take off and go work. And that was my escape, where I didn't have to pay attention to it, you know. And it got to the point where it's just fight after fight after fight every time I come home. And, you know, if a husband could have filed for spousal abuse, I probably could have. You know, my guilt of leaving all the time, you know, I was making good money. I was 18, 19 years old when we first started dating and stuff. And this is the way I showed her how much I loved her. I pulled my wallet out and I said, here, here, here. And then I would go. And we get in fights, and I can remember times where I'd come home and she'd want to talk, you know. And I'm doing driving 16 hours and she'd want to sit up and talk, and I'm just too tired to talk. And I'd go back there and lay down in the waterbed, and one night she'd come in there and she said, okay, you don't want to talk? Fine. She grabbed a butcher knife, and we had a waterbed, and she said, shh, shh. Cut that waterbed right out from around me, man. I just sunk. The water went everywhere. She became a knife-carrying, gun-shooting woman there for a long time. So, and I'll get into that. But, you know, I just didn't know what was wrong, and I just kept ignoring it. I kept ignoring her feelings. I kept ignoring her. I thought the best thing I can do is just keep forking that money out and feeding her physically, not emotionally, you know. And I ran, and I kept going. And then it got to the point, you know, over the years, we had lost 4 children. And she'd get 5 or 6 weeks pregnant and miscarriage. And it got to the point where that and everything else was just taking too much of a toll on both of us. And she decided one day after a big blow up that she was going to get some help. Finally listened to her mom and dad. You know, her mom and dad had tried to help her and stuff. And she grew up in Alateen. She went to Alateen meetings when she was a young child, you know, and she knew about the program and stuff. And so she decided to go get sober and stuff. So she started going to meetings. And by this time, we were married, you know, been married for a little while. And we first started dating in 1981, April 27th. This past April was 30 years that we've been together, all except for 18 months. We have been married, divorced twice, and we live together today and have been for about 12 years now, you know. And the marriages and the divorces come since we entered AA and Al-Anon. When we started trying to work on, you know, she was working on herself. I went for that first year in 1991 just to keep my foot in the door. I don't claim that year because, it was for all the wrong reasons I was going. And in So she was going, taking care of herself, and doing what she was supposed to be doing, and I was getting furious. You know, I'd come in town and she'd be gone, off to them meetings, doing what she's supposed to be doing, taking care of herself. And it just got to the point where, now here I'm the one doing all the griping and complaining because I ain't getting no attention from her when I'm home and all this. And the insanity inside me starts to just build and build and build. And it got more progressive as the years went on. But, you know, she'd go to meetings, and then she'd come home, she'd go to work, come home, go to meetings. And I got to the point where it just wasn't gonna work. So her answer to that was, and her sponsor's answer at the time was, it doesn't matter what she does as long as she don't drink and she stays sober. Man, I just got more mad. It just made me extremely livid. And she got to the point where she looked at me one night and she said, "That's it. I'm done. I got to go. I got to do what she has to do for herself." And a lot of things that weren't happening back then, I know today, was the exact thing she needed to do, not only to help herself, but to help me. Because I didn't have that much strength or courage inside of me to do the things I needed to do for a long time. So she went to meetings and she filed for divorce and it was explained to me, now, look, I'm going to live over here with Mom, but we can still see each other every once in a while. And it was like, okay, good. I can deal with that, you know, for a little while. I can deal with that. You're not totally leaving, so I still got my foot in the door and stuff. And so she started, and we separated, and she filed for the first divorce. And you know, I was okay with that. One thing I couldn't figure out, though, was when she'd come over to the house, everything was fine. When she would leave, I'd get sick. You know, I'd get dead sick. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't walk. My back would hurt, everything else. And I'd call her on the phone. "I don't feel good." "Oh," she'd come back to the house, and I'd be fine. And I mean physically feel sick. And I couldn't figure it out for a long, long time. And I was so enmeshed. And who she was and how she was, that I had no feelings of my own. It was there, you know. And I don't know if I was trying to make up for things subconsciously, that trying to hold on to something or what, but it was a mess for a long, long time. And then we had a three-bedroom little house, and I lived in one little room of that house. This is where I stayed for 6 months, in that one little bitty room in that house. I couldn't sleep in the regular bedroom. I couldn't do a lot of things. It was just crazy. I couldn't work. I'd quit traveling. I said, you know, if I quit traveling, maybe I'll stay home and do this stuff. And boy, it just got worse. Got to the point we were back and forth and back and forth and back and forth that first 6 months. And she had about 5 years in coming to meetings. She went back out. Now, I first started coming to Al-Anon, I started hearing this stuff. I couldn't control it, I can't cure it, and I can't, the three C's. But there's one thing I never heard, and that was that I could contribute to it. And that's exactly what I did. To the disease of alcoholism, I contributed to it. Man, if she stayed sober, if she could stay sober through what some of the stuff I was doing, she would do good. You know, she got drunk one time, I had moved her. I got mad. We got mad, and she'd separate, and we'd separate, and we'd get back together. She'd come back to the house, and she'd go to Mom's, and then she got to the point where she couldn't go to Mom's. You know, it was just like me. For a while there, I would go to Mom's, and I'd come back home. Then I'd go to Mom's, and I'd come back home. And well, all the time we were doing that, we were just bringing that sickness to our families. It's like, you know, Mom, God, she's doing it again, and all this stuff, and Mom would get mad. Well, of course she would get mad. I was her son. Same way with Marie. She would get mad when Peggy would go home and say that stuff. You know, and then we'd get back together. "Oh, I love her so much, and we're going to work this out and all this stuff." And it just kept them all crazy, you know, insane. And they were just as insane as we was trying to fix things and make things. And I said, I took her one time, and I moved her a block over from the house, one street over from the house. And she called me. and she staged her own robbery and pawned everything. She pawned the TV, the stereo. She pawned everything she had, you know. And she calls me on the phone. And she goes, I got broke into, Vince. I got broke into. Everything's gone. I said, okay, fine. I go running over there thinking I can save it and you know, and make sure she's okay and protect her and all this stuff. And I go, all right, come on, we'll go change the doorknobs and all this stuff. And then go to the store, and I rebought her all brand new TV, replaced everything for her, you know. So she never had to worry about anything. There I was constantly, you know, buying, fixing, doing something to get that need filled from somebody else that was totally incapable of filling it at that time. And it just got extreme. You know, at the same time that was going on, her dad had called one night, that night. We were back over there changing locks. And of course, she was still using. And she got mad. And he come to the house. Him and Marie come over to the house. And he was cussing. And he walked into the bedroom, and she was back there in the back bedroom, and she was just laying into him, and he smacked her. And through all I'd been through, or we had been through, that was something you did not do. I didn't care who you was. I'm a pretty big guy. I was at that time, too. And I grabbed her dad by his throat, and I slammed him up against the wall, and I took him to the floor and told him, did you ever lay your hands on her? Nobody does that. I don't care who she is. So from that point on, it took a little bit longer, a little bit more craziness. She went back to meetings, and she started going to meetings. And I started going to meetings and went to Solutions. It was my first group out there. It's where, like Teresa said earlier, she come in. And we had a great home group back then. I mean, that was the group that I needed. It had 30, 35 people in it. We did things together. I mean, I remember going to concerts together. We've got a whole section of rows at concerts and stuff. And we all participated. We'd go to Cracker Barrel till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and talk, you know. But that's what I needed. I didn't need to be alone. I was real dangerous when I was by myself, extremely dangerous, because I would not leave her alone when I was by myself. Even though she was doing what she was supposed to be doing, I'd get out of the Al-Anon meetings, and I'd go sit outside the AA meetings to find out what guy she was going to walk out the door with. I mean, it was pretty bad. It was pretty bad, you know. And she would come around and talk, and then we'd go. I used to sit at Shoney's the first couple of years. I was in the program. I'd go down and sit at Shoney's down on Covington Pike. If you want to know where I was, I bet you it was a year or better that I sat down there every night of the week. I was too scared to be alone by myself at the house because I didn't know what I was going to do. So I'd go down there and sit, and even though nobody was sitting at the table with me, I still had people around me, you know. And that's where I sat and did. I had a sponsor at the time, and I'd sit and did all my step work, everything there for a year or better. Every night of the week, that's where if you want to know where I was, that's where you would find me. And people would come down after meetings and stuff, and you know, we'd sit and talk afterwards. But from the time I got off work, one of the 7 jobs I had tried to keep in about 6 months period of time, I couldn't even hold a job down. And I'm sitting here in Al-Anon two, three years into the program, and she's going along doing what she's supposed to be doing, and we get our second divorce, and we separate. And this time, I've got enough in me to say, okay, look, I've got the people around me to help me to say, okay, I need to stay away, and I need to do what I need to do. And Craig, at the time, he was one of the guys that went to the Solutions meeting, who become my sponsor at the time, was involved in district level. And I started going to district meetings, and I started going to assemblies and stuff like that. So he was keeping me busy in between doing things. And that saying, when I got busy, I got better, really come true for me, because for those times that I was gone and I was doing things, I kind of, you know, we didn't have any problems. But there was a couple times that I would come back home and I would see her probably within the first 3 or 4 months of doing those things when I started doing this for me, that I did see her, and she would talk to me, and she had an apartment by herself, and she, you know, you want to try it again and stuff. And it only took me about 2 more times of doing that. You want to try it again to see what happens. And I'd go over there and pack my little bag and from my house and go over there and stay with her. And then she would go to those meetings. She'd stay out till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, 4 o'clock, talking to all them alcoholics out there. And, you know, and I didn't know what she was doing, and she wouldn't call or nothing. And by the time she'd come back home, I was furious. I thought you were supposed to be changing and all this stuff. And I got furious one night, and she said, "Fine, out." And there I went again, man, out. And I had known some people in the program, and I had really one very, very special friend of mine. And she was home, and she hadn't gone to work yet. And I grabbed my car keys, and I left. And I just left all my stuff there, and I went over there and spent the night on her couch. And about 2 o'clock that afternoon when I woke up, I walk out to my truck, and there's all my stuff sitting around my truck out there in the yard. She knew where I went. She knew where I went. I was pissed. How dare you? How dare you do what you just did overnight and then come and do this to me now, throw me out, and then come over here and do this? I'll show you. She lived in a 2-story apartment. It had balconies on the outside. And at this time, a girl named Bonnie was my sponsor there in Al-Anon in Memphis. And I just drive over there and I pound on the door, and she's home, and she won't answer the door because I'm mad. I said, "Fine." I go around outside, climb up the first balcony, jump up the second balcony. Here I go to go through the sliding glass door, and she slides that door open like that. She has a telephone in her hand. She says, "Here, this is for you." It was Bonnie on the other line. Well, he said, "You got about 3 seconds and I'm calling the police." So I ended up leaving. So it was a trip. And she had a good time. She'd egg me on. She really would. But I deserved it. You know, I deserved it. And like I said, I sat at Shoney's there for a long time, and she had started dating this guy. And when I first found out about it, I was out in California doing a job. And she had, you know, she told me she wasn't going to date nobody for a while, you know, and stuff. And then I found out about it, and I jumped on it, left my guys out in California doing their job, jumped on an airplane, drove home, got my cousin's car so she wouldn't recognize me. drove her over out to the apartment, set her outside and watched her, and there he was. And at this time, you know, that was later. So at this time, I go in, and after this, I sit outside, and I walk up to the door, and I kick the door in. And she's calling the cops. She has the cops on the phone. And this is in Bartlett. They're in Bartlett. And one of my jobs earlier, prior to, was I was a bouncer at a bar, rough bar there in Memphis called Mugs. And I bounced for about 3 or 4 years. Perfect job for an Al-Anon. Get mad at an alcoholic. Go take care of the active ones down there fighting. I don't have to get mad at home. Just go out there. I was lucky. I never had to do that. God seemed fit that I didn't have to do that. And but I did get to know a lot of the cops out there in Bartlett. And when she called them, they showed up that night. I kicked her door in, and they come up there and shook my hand and said, "Hello, Vince. How you doing?" I said, "All right." He said, "I think you need to go home." She was mad. She was cussing mad, man. Cops even allowed me to do the stupid things that I needed to do, you know. And they did. I needed to do all that so I could see who I was later on after I really got involved in the steps and doing what I'm supposed to be doing. You know, it gave me that opportunity to look back at the insane behavior. So we stayed separated for about, I guess, about 18 months total. And I really got involved in Al-Anon. I mean, I was going to 4 or 5 meetings a week, different meetings. I was going to World Service, I mean, up to Assembly 4 times a year. I'd gone from GR to DR to chairman of the Assembly and was working, going on. And we took and she stayed sober for a long time and doing what she was supposed to do. And she called me one afternoon and she said, I think we need to talk. And I said, okay, we'll talk. I said, but I won't come and get you. I won't meet you at my house or your house. We'll go somewhere public and sit down and talk. And she met me, and she sat down, and she says that she would like to get back together again and try it one more time. And I looked at her with all the honesty that I could look at her and tell her, I don't trust you. I just don't trust you. And she said, I don't blame you. But that was the first time I ever realized, finally, I was doing something for me and being honest with myself enough to do what I needed to do. And we went, you know, we didn't start dating right away, but at that point. And later on, for a good reason, she started dating somebody else. And at this time, I was still sitting at Shoney's and stuff, and she drove through the parking lot one night. And he was in the truck with her. And they drove it through the parking lot to make me mad. And my first instinct all the time was get up, go after her, chase her down, talk to her. Maybe I could change her mind or something. Well, anyways, she come through the parking lot that one night, and she come inside, and she had parked, and she come inside, and she wanted to talk to him. And we got in an argument, another argument, and she got up and took off, and I got up and started walking towards the door, and she had gotten her car and took off. And for some ungodly reason that I'll never be able to explain in my life, my focus went a different direction. Standing behind the Captain D's sitting over there in this big spotlight down in the parking lot was a little baby raccoon over there. And I was getting into my truck, and I had a little bag of M&Ms. And I went from my truck to that baby raccoon up underneath that light and rolled those M&Ms to him one at a time until he come and got it out of my hand. A wild animal. And he was eating them out of the palm of my hand. That's why they're my favorite. God did for me that night and showed me that night that if I take care of myself and I leave everything else alone, everything's going to work out the exact way it's supposed to work out. If I just get enough to do for myself. So things changed, needless to say, at that time. We went on, and I didn't see her good for a good long time after that, you know, months after that. I wouldn't even talk to her on the telephone. This had to be about me and nobody else, or nothing else. And I went on, and I went back on the road, traveling, and doing what I do today. And started getting more and more involved. And I made it all the way up to alternate delegate, served as alternate delegate for the state. And those were probably the first 9 to 10 years of my life that I've ever done anything for myself that made me feel as good about myself. That's got me where I am today. You know, it helped me grow more and more, and stuff. Now, Teresa said, yeah, I was involved in the building, and I was. Raleigh Groups was one of the, we started a clubhouse up there, and I had signed a lease, and because I knew the owner and all that stuff, and I got real involved in the clubhouse too, and held the treasury for a long time, and stuff. And it come a point in time where I had to let that go. And that was tough. It was tough to do. You know, it had been a part of my life for a long, long time in the program. I still hold the lease to it, but what they do and how they do it and all that stuff, it is none of my business anymore. And for a long time, I thought it was my business. You know, and it's just not. And they're doing fine. They're doing good. You know, I only got two rules. You keep the grass cut and you keep the place cleaned up. If you do that, you won't hear me say a word, you know, because I rent the place from somebody else. So it's, you know, down the line. But it's tough. It was, you know, that reoccurring feeling of something that you care about and you love and you respect. You know, it's not only just people that we can have an attachment to, and to be able to let that go and be okay was a trip, but I've been able to do that over the years, the past couple years, and go on. It's been about, I don't know, we moved out to Oakland about 3 years ago. We built a new house. Now, I was telling you about her dad earlier, her mom and dad, where I threw him up the wall and all that stuff. And the second time we got married, they were going to build a house. Her parents were going to build a house out in Millington, Mumford, Millington, north of Memphis there. And we were living in an apartment. And I'd gone back prior to and made amends to her dad for what I did. And they come to us, to me and Peggy, and offered the house they were living to for us to move into, you know. And it was like nothing I ever seen before, you know. Things just start happening. You know, this is a guy that I took and threw up against the wall and threatened his life, and now he's handing me a $30,000 home at no rent, no nothing, you know, to move into and stuff. So we lived there for about 12 years, and I guess something like that. And about 3 years ago, we decided to build a house out in Oakland, and we moved out there, and the neighborhood had gotten so rough over there where we lived. There was drive-by shootings and all this stuff. And I was fortunate enough to where I was be able to take for 1 year while we were living, the last year we lived there, that I was able to remodel the whole house one room at a time and settled enough to get to move out there. Now, what I found out through all of our stuff and going through and her sobriety, Peggy would have 19 years this year if she wouldn't have relapsed. And she's relapsed three times over the years. And now she has 6 years. She just celebrated 6 years in March, this past March. And, you know, there's a page in the Al-Anon book that says, we can live with an alcoholic whether they're drinking or not. That's one of the pages I grew up on when I was coming in these rooms, you know, and how we do it. It's the only page I know of that tells you how to do it. You have to emotionally detach yourself. There's another page in the ODEP, in the Courage to Change book, at the bottom of it, it says, in the process of fighting a monster, make sure you don't become a monster. And for years, I fought that monster. For years, I became that monster. And this program, in Alcoholics Anonymous, and Al-Anon, has showed me how not to do that anymore. I travel all around this country, and I go to a lot of different meetings, a lot of different places. I would love to sit here and tell you that there are Al-Anon meetings everywhere. But there just ain't, folks. There really aren't. Or if they are, they're at noon, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I work until 6:30 at night when I'm out on the road, so I can't make those. So I have to go into an awful lot of open AA meetings. And sometimes they're closed AA meetings, and I just go in and sit down and say, I have a desire not to drink today. But I also carry, on the average, 3 to 4 alcoholics with me. They work for me. I have some are the children that growed up around the program. I got 2 boys that work for me that are children of alcoholics that, I knew when they were this big, and now they're 15, 20, 21, 22 years old, and they're on the road with me, and they're traveling, and they enjoy it, And so we all get together, and we all go to meetings everywhere, And we have a good time, and we see a lot of beautiful places, and we see a lot of things done differently. It's amazing how different when you go from city to city to state to corner, how different meetings really are. I see some wonderful stuff out there. And when I was telling Philip the other night, I went to a meeting in St. Louis. And there was a men's meeting, and it was 70 people strong sitting in that room. And one guy decides he's going to do, his sponsor says, stands up in the room and says, I'm going to do a third step prayer for the guy that's fixing to do his third step. And all 70 guys stand up at one time and get down on one knee and say the third step prayer right there in the middle of the meeting. And the stuff just goes all over you, because it's just a miracle. And I've gone all over the country. I've said Niagara Falls and looked at it was up there doing a job one time, and they were having an anniversary. And the church where they met, just looked out the window, you could see the falls from sitting right there on the church. And I've been to the top of Poconos Mountains and gone to meetings up there and just everywhere, little hole in the wall sometimes. That one in Huntsville, it took me for 3 days to find that thing. We called everywhere, and finally we found it, but it was the Huntsville group. Huntsville Club, I think is the name of it or something over there. And we finally found it, and we were going there, and people, Kathy, Frog's ex-wife, we ran into down there, and it's just great. It's a wonderful life. Years ago, I hated alcoholics. Hated every one of you because I didn't understand. I didn't know. I didn't know what you were doing was what you had to do to save your own lives until I got here and I realized I had to do what I had to do to save my own life. I was dying. At that one point in time, I come back from Florida, I weighed 270-something pounds. At one point, I was wearing suspenders to keep my prints on because I was too poor because I was buying her everything, and I wasn't taking care of myself, and I weighed less than 200 pounds because the stress was eating me alive, because I was totally incapable of taking care of myself. My mind was so messed up, I just couldn't do it. And you people brought me back. Those Al-Anon rooms, those women, they took care of me, buddy. Let me tell you. you women know how you feel when you walk into an AA meeting, you're new, and all the guys go, Jim. It wasn't no difference for me. When I walked in the Al-Anon room, there was 40 women there. My first Christmas in Al-Anon at the group second or third year, when we celebrated, the New Beginnings become a home group because I had moved to another group. I had 45 bottles of bubble bath. That was going to take care of me. Bubble bath everywhere, man. Like a good alcoholic, you know, I go home and I take it to her and I say, all right, let's go spend the night in the hotel room. We'll fix up a big old bubble bath and everything, you know. First thing she does, throw a bar of soap in bubbles. You know what happens? They all go away. You're like an alcoholic. You ruin everything. That was sick, man. That was sick. So, but today I have a greater love today for alcoholics than anybody will ever know. Ever know. You not only put my wife back together, you put me back together. And that was a job. And between the women and the men in the Al-Anon program and the women and the men in the AA program, I have never been turned away. As sick as I got and the things that I did that people knew about. Now, there's a lot of people out there that don't like me in Memphis. I was very outspoken for a long, long time. And it was the deal of, you know, I had to make myself feel better. And sometimes when I did that, it was not pretty because I wasn't going to let you walk on me. I couldn't get rid of that pride and that ego for a long time when I first come in this program. And today I don't have that. You know, I love myself and I love everybody else to give them the right to be who they want to be, however they want to be, and go on and live my life and be okay. And that's how she is. My wife's also bipolar manic depressant. Takes medicine for it. And she stays sober. But I've seen her fight that battle for a long time. If she didn't take her medicine, she wouldn't stay sober. If she didn't stay sober, she wouldn't take her medicine. And she went, we've been out in Oakland 3 years, March. And back at Christmas time this past year, she had to go to the doctor. And the doctor, she had some problems with her lower intestines. And back years ago, which led up to this problem, really it's her stomach and her lower intestines, she almost died. Her sponsor had called me one night, and she got sick, and they had to put her in the hospital. And her little belly, she didn't weigh but 95, 100 pounds, and she looked exactly like one of those little Ethiopian children. Her stomach just blew up, and she just started shedding all of her weight, and she got down to about 75 pounds. And looked like she had a big basketball in her stomach, and the drinking and all that stuff had closed her valve off in her stomach. So she has to take medicine for that ever since then to get back right and keep that valve working in her stomach. So about every year she goes back and they take that little balloon, they stick it down in there and they stretch her out and make sure it's working, you know, yearly checkup and take care of her. And then over the years it has caused a problem with her lower intestines now. And the doctor put her on Dynatel and told her to take three a day, three times a day, on top of her regular bipolar medicine. And she went into a manic for about 3.5 weeks. And I'm gone on the road traveling. And I come home, and I'm home a day or so, and I'm sitting here watching this, and the weight's dropping because of the Dynatel. She's not sleeping, nor is she eating, and I can't do anything. Nothing I can do. No different than the alcoholism. And nothing I can do. Call a doctor. You know, she's going to see a doctor. The doctor wants to give her the medicine. Take her back to the doctor, see if they can change something or do something. But it took about 3 weeks for it to run out of her system. And she got down to 89, 90 pounds around Christmas time this past year. And I was telling Teresa the other day, she's back up to 121 pounds now. Because I stayed out of the way. I let her do what she needed to do to take care of herself. and didn't try to convince her, you need to eat these certain foods to gain, and this, do this, and exercise this, and do all this other stuff. And that's what I would have done a long time ago if it wasn't for these programs. You know, I love you. I care about you. She wanted to be here this weekend. Bad she wanted to be here this weekend. She loves to go with me when I go places. I love for her to be here today. There's a difference. You know, for years I didn't care. Go away. Come here, but go away. And today it's not that way. I like to have her with me. You know, we're friends today. We ain't fought in a long time as far as fighting the way we used to fight. We have little disagreements every once in a while. You know, and I get in my truck and I go out of town, but I call her. I don't hide no more, try to run no more. And I don't pull my wallet out and say, here, go fix it with this anymore. You know, and we have a nice place and it's gorgeous. And it's peaceful and she's happy, you know, and I'm happy. And that's all we could ever ask for. It's all we could ever ask for. You know, her mom, in the past year, for whatever reasons, out of 30 years we've been together, and this is, you know, in the past year, 29 years, she walks up to me and she tells me she loves me and she cares about me. And she, you know, and she does things for me, but she turns around and tells me she loves me. I've never heard that from her in 29 years, and in the past year she's been doing that. You know? And she's seen all this stuff. She's seen all the craziness and the madness that we went through and what we've done and what I've done and stuff. But she's also seen me change. You know, my parents, when I first started coming to meetings and stuff, their attitude was, go, get away, go to California. All that's going to do is remind you of her. And the more you got her on your mind, the more craziness stuff you're going to do. It's nothing but a cult. Just leave. Go out there to California with her brother and be happy. You know, and why would they not think that way? Here I was going to meetings and everything was good. And I was going home and telling them how everything was good and wonderful and all that stuff. And a week later, I was telling them, oh, man, she's a mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. She's doing this again. She's doing that. Why would they not think it didn't work? Because I was putting that across that it wasn't going to work. 3 years later, when we were down the hill at meeting in a place down the hill behind Holick Myers, and we were able to get the place up next to Muggs. We had trees everywhere, and we got out there with the dish witch and started digging stuff up. And I called my dad on the telephone. And I said, "Look, man, you got a tractor? I said we're going to order some rock. Would you come up and spread this rock for us?" And he was there. He was there. He's up there doing it. And glad to do it, you know, because that change that we all go through, those things that we need to do to take care of ourselves. And I quit exhibiting those behaviors of it only works when I want it to work. It works all the time, whether I want it to work or whether I want it to work or not. Today. Because this program grows inside of you deep. And the love that you've come out with inside yourself, I mean, it just spreads. It just spreads. And I can have those bad days. But you know what? I was my own worst enemy for a long, long time. And today I'm not. I am able to forgive myself and trust that whatever God's got planned, He's going to do it the way He wants it done, and it just don't matter anymore. It really just don't matter anymore, you know. And she's the love of my life today, and she always has been. But you know what? When I look at her today, I don't see bipolar, drug addict, alcoholic. I see Peggy standing back there. And I don't pay attention to all that other stuff that goes along with all that other stuff, you know. And I love her for who she is. And that's it. You know, and I couldn't do that for a long time. It was always what I wanted or what she was going to give me to make me feel better about myself, you know, because I didn't care about myself. And I've gotten all that back and more and more. I could never ask for to sit back and look and think that I'd be standing here, you know, and Milton, Teresa, and Joanne, and you know, new people I've met since I spoke last year at Columbus, and new people I see now, and you know, it's just, it's a warm, wonderful feeling, you know, to be able to go places and do things and relax. You know, I get shaky, but it's not that nervousness, scared shaky, that's excitement shaky, you know, that God, if it gets any better, I just don't know what I'm going to do if it gets any better. Life's going good. The recession never hurt me right now, you know, and it's joyful and exciting, and I couldn't ask for anything better. I sat down years ago, probably getting old. I usually don't do that. That's why I don't do it. Come loose. I don't never wear them. Supposed to. I have sunglasses that I wear that aren't dark, that are prescription glasses. So, I don't know if I can get this back in here or not. Yeah, I can. It pops right in. But years ago, when I sponsor guys and stuff, and I still do that. I still sponsor. I still go to meetings when I can. I lost my home group. I had a home group for 15 years, and they closed down. Man, it was hard to do, was go find another group to go to, but there's one out there, and it's called Waggle, and when I'm in town, because I travel an awful lot, that's where I go, so that's what I consider my home group right now. Go there, and I sponsor a couple of guys that go there, and one of them that I sponsor, his son works for me. He just celebrated 6 months sobriety. Ain't been easy. Couple of them ain't been easy. I have some set rules when you work for me. And it says from the time you leave Memphis to the time you get home, there's no drinking or drugging. That's all I ask. Just don't drink, don't drug. I don't care what else you do. We'll go to many meetings. We'll do anything you want to do. Just don't drink and drug. And unfortunately, over a couple years, there's been some of them that go out there and decide they can hide and do what they need to do. They've had to take a bus home from wherever they're at their own expense, because that's my rule. You drink, you drug, you quit, you find your own way home from where we are. And some of them come home from Miami, and some of them come home from Fredericksburg, Virginia, and stuff. But one of the guys I sponsor, his son works for me, and he's off and on. He didn't work for me for about a year. After the stunt he pulled, we were down in Meridian doing a furniture job there, and he decided that he was going to go get drunk. And I was supposed to go on one of my fishing trips. I go fishing every year out in San Diego with my oldest brother and my stepdad, and I have a blast out there, you know. But he decided he's going to go get drunk, and he went away from the hotel, and he didn't call the job, and he wasn't coming back over there. He wasn't messing with anybody. He was on his own. And I called back home, and I said, told his dad and his mom and them what he'd done and stuff. So they taught me into it, because I left. I was coming back home. I was coming back home to catch an airplane to go back to fly out to San Diego on my fishing trip. And I had left one of the other guys down there. And between his parents and Peggy, they convinced me into going back and getting him out of the hotel room. I was about 100 miles away. I really didn't want to go back, but I did. I did. I went back and went over to the little hotel and snatched him up, poured all of his liquor out, threw all of his clothes in the back of the truck, snatched him up, put him in the back seat of the truck, and took off back home. And we got there at I-20 and 45, and he decided that that's not what he wanted to do. He jumped out of the truck as we were going around the curve. And I punched the gas, and I kept going. All the way home. Called his mom and dad, told them on the phone, What he did, called the state trooper, said, look, you got a drunk on the highway, you better go pick him up before he gets killed. I did my part. I did what I was, you know, what I thought I should do. And the rest of it was up to whoever and whenever. And I got almost to Memphis, and I called the state trooper back, and they said they had picked him up. Took him right back to the hotel where he was. Didn't even take him to jail. Took him right back to the hotel where I picked him up out of. And so he didn't work for me for a year. And he just celebrated 6 months last week at his home group. And totally doing, I mean, has grabbed hold of something. And you can see the difference. You can see the light in the eye and the fire in his, fire in his eyes. And hopefully hangs on to it. You know, hopefully he does what he needs to do to take care of himself. Yeah. I love him and I care about him. But they are who they are. And so anyways, I sat down about, I don't know, a couple, 4, 5, 6 years ago, and I was one of the guys I was sponsoring. His dad died, and I was sitting around the room one afternoon, and I sat and wrote a poem. Because I was thinking about my life and how I come and what I've been through. And I'm going to close with this. It says, God's love. He loved my parents so much he gave them me. He loved me so much that he gave me you. He loved you so much that he gave you us. He loved us so much he gave us the 12 steps. He loved the 12 steps so much that he gave them to all his special friends. He loved his special friends so much, he gave them the right to start all over again. To start all over again. And thank God that everybody sitting in these rooms across this world have given me the right to start all over again. Thank you.